You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster film in the last decade, then chances are that it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
I've got a guest right now that is very familiar to the program. He is Cliff May from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Cliff, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. How are you?
I am well, but I am a wee bit concerned about our escalation in Ukraine. And I don't think there's any way that you can look at it and say that it is not an escalation. What exactly is happening right now? And how do you feel about it?
Well, the most important thing that's happening really is that the Germans are going to give Leopard tanks to the Ukrainians which they can use to better defend themselves. It's not an escalation in the sense that the tanks are not going over the border into Russia to take Russian cities. By the way, the Americans have also promised some Abram tanks. Those will be months to come because they're much more complicated to use than the Leopard tanks. And basically, Olaf Scholz, Chancellor of Germany, sort of said, well, I want the Americans to get some tanks before we do because he doesn't want to provoke Putin. He's very worried about provoking Putin, making an enemy. So there was pressure on him to do something because he's not doing enough with the collective security. He'd say, well, we're giving more money. We're spending more on Ukraine than anybody except the U.S. He has spent a lot less than the U.S. is. But anyhow, it's support of NATO. They're giving tanks, the tanks will allow Ukrainians to somewhat better defend their homes and their land. I don't see it as an escalation, except that it helps them better defend themselves. There's no point in our supporting Ukraine so that people die longer, more slowly, and lose their country. But we can say, yeah, but we helped a little bit for a little while anyway. That's really not quite a very good policy.
Well, and you know, here's my concern, Cliff, and I'm concerned that this is how it begins, and that you know we eventually will see American soldiers in battle in Ukraine against Russia. And though we committed to defend Ukraine back when we asked them to give up their nuclear program, so in one respect, I'm glad we're actually following through on that commitment. Do you think this is going to be enough to bring this to an end? Because I read Pravda online every day, because you can use Google Translate now. The vision of their war in Pravda is much different than the vision of war we're being given here. And where is the truth between those two?
Well, nothing you read in Pravda is the truth. The word Pravda actually means truth in Russian, but it never been in Soviet times or now should you take it very seriously. It doesn't mean it may not be something in it. But the real point is this. We are not, the Ukrainians have not asked, they could, but they have not asked us to send Americans to defend them. They are saying instead, give us the weapons, the tools we need to defend ourselves. That's all we want. We're a free country. We're a sovereign country. You're a free country. You're a sovereign country. Can you not help us so we can defend our country? Because the alternative is you abandon us and you allow Vladimir Putin to wage an imperial war of aggression and conquer us and destroy us as a society and as a nation. And if we do that, well, you think that's, you know, then Xi Jinping knows, okay, then I can take Taiwan, what the heck. And Ali Khamenei in Tehran says, okay, I can take Bahrain, I can take UAE, I can take Saudi Arabia, I can wipe out the Israelis, what the heck. Some of this, you know, there are a number of reasons Putin did this, he did this, and why he's doing this, and we can go over those. But part of it was he saw Biden abandon the Afghans. Now, there are Afghans, I hope we know this now, who really wanted to see a decent government, certainly not a Taliban government. I'm not saying there were huge numbers of them, but there were. And we're seeing what's happening to the women. They're out in the streets. They're protesting because they can't even go to school now. They wanted the Americans there. We had 2,800 troops. We got 28,000 in Korea since at present. 2,800 troops assisting and aiding, not in combat. I'm not saying they were no danger. They were, but they were doing just fine. But once Putin saw that, he said, look, these guys, I can see what they are. They abandon, they run. They're not going to fight the Taliban. They're not going to fight me. And they're not going to risk a fight with me. And that's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons he decided now's the time for me to take over Ukraine. I do not support sending American troops there. We are now, by the way, we are committed, really committed. We can talk about the commitment we had to Ukraine. That's important. That's in the Budapest Memorandum, but it's different. We're committed very much under NATO to support the NATO countries that surround Ukraine, right? And I got to tell you, if Putin does take Ukraine successfully, here's what I predict. I predicted in my column, as you know, this week. He's immediately going to take Moldova. That's really low-hanging fruit. It's not a member of NATO. Nobody's going to do any. They can't defend themselves the way the Ukrainians have. Pretty much nobody expected the Ukrainians to defend themselves the way they have. Once he's done that, what is he going to do? How about the rest of Georgia? He took two provinces in 2008. Might as well take the rest of that. The Georgians are going to put up a fight? How much? We're going to support them? Not again. Then maybe Kazakhstan would be good because there's a lot of Russian speakers in the north. They've got oil. They've got uranium. That would be good. And then at that point, how about he's got something called Kaliningrad? It is Russian territory that is not contiguous with Russia. You got to go through Belarus, and you got to go through Lithuania. Let's suppose he decided to drive through and make a land bridge to Kaliningrad, which is where his Baltic fleet is. Well, I don't think anybody is going to, and that's a NATO member, but I don't think NATO countries are going to send troops to fight and die to liberate southern Lithuania. So now you've got to understand where we're going with all this. We're entering a very different world. We've got to imagine what it's going to be like in this very different world. And keep in mind, Russia now has a partnership with Xi Jinping, or Putin has a partnership with Xi Jinping that has, quote-unquote, no limits. That's their language. And you've got Iran supplying drones and maybe soon missiles to Russia as well. You've got the North Koreans, who have nuclear weapons and increasingly good missiles to deliver them anywhere in the world, supported by China. You have Venezuela that's part of this whole group. Not just me, but people like H.R. McMaster, the historian Neil Ferguson, Congressman Mike Gallagher, all say what we got on our hands, whether we recognize it or not, is a new Cold War. We can ignore this for a while, but that's dangerous because if somebody's fighting you and you don't recognize they're fighting you and you don't respond to their fighting you, you're probably going to find yourself on the curb with a broken nose. So that's where we are. So the one thing we can do is we can be a bit of an arsenal of democracy and we can supply tanks, for example, and missiles and that defensive missiles and help the Ukrainians defend themselves, because what we want strategically from a national interest point of view is that Putin doesn't win. From a point of values, we want the Ukrainians to win. From a national security perspective, we want Putin to lose because he is an anti-American imperialist and he is in league with other anti-American imperialists, and that's the world we live in.
So, Cliff, let me ask you this question. How is there any possibility? During the beginning of this conflagration, we heard, rumors here and there that there were parts of his inner circle that were turning on him, or maybe he has cancer, or maybe this, or maybe that. What are the chances of Putin actually being deposed in some way, shape, or form over this if things continue to go badly?
The truth is we don't really know. It was probably more predictable in Soviet times, because in Soviet times, you actually did have, to an extent, separate power centers, the intelligence bureaucracy, the military, the Communist Party. You didn't have civil society or anything like that, but you had some. Putin has had 20 years pursuing essentially a Stalinist policy, by which I mean anybody who is an enemy of his or might become an enemy of his has to be eliminated, either physically in some cases.
Cliff, hang on a second. Something just happened to your phone, and I've got there it's gone. Wait, did you get it? Did you put him on hold? Let's see if we just got a ton of static. We're going to see if we can fix that really quickly, because that's things like static really bust my brain. So we're going to fix that. But, we'll continue our conversation. I want to know the rest of this question, and that's not very comforting to say, hey, we have no idea how strong or how weak Vladimir Putin is. As long as he is in charge, we are going to have to deal with him. But so essentially your answer is we have no idea if Putin is vulnerable from within the country.
He's not very vulnerable in the country. He doesn't get very close to anybody. That's why I wrote a column where he talks to himself, because there's very few people he can talk to. You've seen him. He sits at tables far away from people. People probably can't even get a butter knife when they come and have a coffee with him. It's not impossible, but it's not easy for someone to depose him. We do think he's not well. I believe that, but you don't know how sick he is or what that means. Here's what part of it is. He would have been smart to do what a lot of Russia analysts predicted he would do, which is repeat what he did in 2014, 2008. In other words, he took in 2008, he takes two slices out of Georgia. In 2014, he takes Crimea, a slice out of Ukraine, and parts of the eastern Ukraine, Donbass. Why not take another slice out of the salami, out of the kolbasa?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think part of the reason he decided not to do that, part of what I talked about is Afghanistan, and part of it is because he thought that the Europeans were dependent on him for energy, part because he thought Biden is much more interested in waging war on fossil fuels. But also he thought, you know what? Let's face it, I'm an old man in a hurry. I don't have another 9 years to wait for another slice. If I want to restore the Russian Empire, I kind of need to get moving on this right now. And this seems like the time to strike a blow and do this. He thought his army was super strong. He thought the Ukrainians would roll over. They kind of did after he took Crimea. It was going to be easy. He didn't think it would be going on for a year like this. But he didn't have time to slice the salami because of his age and health and all of that. Now, various things could happen. He could be deposed, and if he is, he's probably going to be deposed by a bad guy. But the bad guy can say, you know what, this was a mistake the way that Putin did it. I would have done it better. We have to rebuild. Don't forget, he's probably lost 100,000 soldiers in battle. He's probably lost 500,000 young, educated Russians who have fled the country. He is running low on weapons. Of course, he's getting some from North Korea. He's getting some from Iran. I don't think China's giving him, but I could be wrong, but we don't see signs of that. So he's running out of, at a certain point, he may say, I'm running out of bodies, I'm running out of bullets. At that point, what will he do? At that point, he will go to somebody he is reasonably friendly with, like Olaf Scholz, Chancellor of Germany, or Emmanuel Macron of France, or Erdogan of Turkey, or Modi of India, and say, okay, here's my bottom line. And here's what I've got to have. And they'll probably say, I don't know when you're going to get all that, but if you want to start a serious negotiation, okay, I'm sure the Ukrainians, they don't want to compromise, but I think they will. But it's got to be a real negotiation, not them coming to you to surrender. They're not going to do that, and I don't think we can force them to go that far. But if in a negotiation, at the end of the day, remove all your troops from everywhere but Crimea, I think you can get away with that. But you got to start somewhere, but Putin hasn't shown signs of that yet. For one thing, he was hoping there would be no tanks. For another thing, he's planning on a winter an offensive in the spring.
Right.
And he hopes that will be decisive. May not be. The Ukrainians were talking. I talked to some diplomats here about a winter offensive, which I don't see happening the way they had hoped it would. I don't know why.
I mean, golly, it's cold as all get out. I mean, that's like the worst time ever. Till mountain offensive, it's freaking freezing up there. I mean, my goodness.
But the Ukrainians can do it better than the Russians because they're actually better supplied in terms of uniforms. They know how to operate in their own territory. The Russians are kind of getting stuck in sort of bunkers and trenches. But they're dug in good, but they're dug in with, and they don't have a lot of ways necessarily to get food. And they're demoralized because they're not fighting for anything that makes sense, whereas the Ukrainians are fighting for freedom and homeland and things that really do matter to them.
What just happened in Ukraine? I saw a bunch of officials were fired or arrested for corruption. I saw the story yesterday. Yeah. What is going on there?
Zelensky is very well aware of all the criticisms being made, not least by some people on the right. And he knows that corruption that could absolutely kill off the support he's getting. He cannot tolerate corruption at all. Now, look, countries that are fledgling democracies have corruption. Let me remind you, there's some corruption in the United States that I am aware of. I'm sorry, I don't know how it is that President Biden, after a career in politics and its public service, has a beach house and a home and a Corvette. I think Hunter Biden may have something to do with it. I'm not going to say too much, but let's understand. Corruption is common in a lot of governments. So he knows he has to be seen by everybody as seriously fighting corruption. If he gets a whiff of it anywhere, he's gonna crack down. Should we have accountability? Should we have oversight? Should we have an inspector? Yeah, we should do all of that stuff. I think we're doing a lot of it. We should do more. When we're sending tanks, the tanks are not going to end up in somebody's garage locked up next to the Corvette. I guarantee you they're going to be used to fight. That's what a tank is for. Money, obviously, it's easier to skim off of, but we don't know about that, and I don't think corruption has been a problem in Ukraine. It may be a problem again, but that's no reason not to. These are a free people, I've been there a number of times. The last time I was there was their last elections. People were damn proud that they were getting to vote. They were really happy that they were free. They could talk to me. They could say what was on their mind. They weren't going to get pulled into the KGB. They weren't going to put in jail. They like that. That's part of the reason Putin was unhappy with Ukraine as well. He doesn't want Russians looking over the fence and saying, how come they're free people and we're not?
It's a great point. I mean, it's a really hard sell. It's one of the reasons why they work so hard to keep the internet out of China. When you see how the other half lives, it gets really difficult to tell people that their way is superior when they don't have the same things they see other people having. One last question for you, Cliff. Are we depleting our own ability to defend ourselves by sending gear, equipment, and everything else to Ukraine?
Absolutely. And this should be a wake-up call for us in two important ways, okay? One way, the first good way is, everybody in the world is now seeing that American weapons are better than Russian weapons. They didn't know that before. They want to buy them. But we have to be able to supply them. Two, we now know that it's not enough to have 3 weeks' worth of weaponry in our warehouse sitting there because that's plenty. No, what we call the defense industrial base is not at anywhere near the level it needs to be, neither for us to be the arsenal democracy, as we were before World War II, despite the Depression, nor for us to defend ourselves with the multiple threats we have, not least from China and from China and Taiwan, with Taiwan and all that.
Right.
Not at all. So what we have to do is build up the defense industrial base by a huge amount. Is that easy to do? No, that is hard to do. What do you need to do? Well, you need to make it a priority, and it has to be certainly a bigger priority than waging a war against fossil fuels and impoverishing people in the third world who need electricity and can't get it through solar and power, and also making it hard for Americans to maintain their living standards, because you will not, if they tell you, as they are in California, you must buy an electric car. By the way, the price of electricity is going up. By the way, we're only going to give you electricity 8 hours a day because we just don't have it. We can't do any more than that. The sun's not shining. The wind's not blowing enough.
Here's one last thought for you, Cliff, on this. Somebody just hit our text line with, hey, Mandy, I don't know if you know this, but there's a body of water on the northern border of Crimea. When the Russians pushed past the border and invaded Crimea, the Ukrainians complained and the Russians renamed the body of water to the Crimea River. Long way to go for that joke. So there you go.
But I appreciate a good pun.
I thought you would like that. That's why I thought it. Cliff May from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Always great to talk to you. Always great information. You know, one last question. There's a lot of nuclear saber rattling going on. Is any of it something we should worry about?
Yes, absolutely. But also keep in mind, this is in my column. Please feel free to post it. The nuclear card makes sense for Putin to hold, not to play, because once he uses it, he loses it.
Yeah.
He wants to threaten, you'll do what I say or you'll have a nuclear war. But if he doesn't use the card, if he only plays it and he gets his way in Ukraine, he can do the same thing, say with Lithuania, say with Estonia, say with he wants, if he knows we're afraid of his nuclear, again, tactical nuclear weapons, he could use in Ukraine, all it would do is destroy the country he wants to take over. From a military point of view, it's not that much that's really effective. A nuclear exchange with the U.S., well, he can threaten that. He could do that. If he's a madman, he might. But it's not less likely he does that if we simply submit to him and do what he wishes.
Got it.
Once he understands that wins, again, he will play that card over and over and over again.
All right, Cliff, I'm going to let you go because your phone got all woozy again. So we'll talk to you again soon, my friend, and thanks for the great info on Ukraine. All right, that's Cliff May, defense of democracies. I've been watching. I haven't been talking about it because honestly, there hasn't been a lot of significant kind of movement. There's been a lot of threats. There's been a lot of headlines. World War III and all this stuff. I'm glad I asked Cliff that last question because I haven't necessarily been buying it myself.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster film in the last decade, then chances are that it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.